when we talk about improving that employee experience, part of that employee experience is the job. Well, 100% of it is job design, right? And it's understanding the notion that you should actually be building that position and customizing it based on the individual who's in it. What if you actually ask the individual in the position how to help kind of redefine that position to better match and align with their strengths and to leverage their strengths, all the while getting the work done by all means.
Welcome to the Introspective Leader Podcast, where Rachel and I take a deep dive into the ideas and practices that will help you become a more effective and respected organizational leader. I am Stuart, and as a retired Army Senior Non-Commissioned Officer, a former hospital executive, and a management instructor, I have been leading and managing for almost 30 years and teaching it for over 15. Rachel is an Army officer and a healthcare practitioner, and while she is relatively new to the gig, she is one of the most talented young leaders I have come across. So thank you for joining us, and we will see you on the other side. Hey, you. Before we get back to the show, just a quick reminder. If you're enjoying it, give us that 5-star review and share it with at least one other person who you think will also enjoy it. That's it. Back to the show. Hello, everyone. Today, I welcome Ms. Lorianne Tequay to our show. After 21 years in government, Lorianne founded and is the CEO of the People Person HR Growth Solutions, where she and her staff provide training, leadership and management development, and a full range of other HR and organizational development services designed to help their client organizations become that highly sought after employer where people want to work, stay, and thrive. Lorianne is a certified dispute resolution practitioner, a licensed partner of Wiley's Everything Disc suite of assessment products, and possesses a graduate certificate in human resources management and labor relations, and a Bachelor of Arts in humanities. And with that, Lorianne, welcome to the Introspective Leader Podcast, where, as we like to say, the complexities of leadership are met with an equal complexity of thought.
Well, thanks for having me.
We're very, very happy to have you here, Lorianne. Before I get into my specific questions, I'd like to give you a moment just to say a little bit about yourself, what you do, your company, a little bit about your past, or whatever you want to give to our audience.
Sounds good. So essentially, in addition to the wonderful intro you've already given me, as a business, once I've exited from government after the 21 years stint there, I started a business really aimed at shaking up cultures. I'm that catalyst who comes in, and if you think about a snow globe, I shake it up. I make sure that when it falls back into place, that it's actually enabling you to not only engage your existing employees, but also starting to help you attract those that additional talent. Because let's face it, it's a job seeker's market up out there. And, you know, 1 in 4 employees that are currently in your employ are actually 1 foot out the door and shopping. So that being said, it's really important that employers spend time really assessing and mapping out that end-to-end employee experience and actually start to implement some tweaks to the experience itself on a day-to-day basis to make sure that it's actually providing the motivational drivers per se that will help, that will make people want to show up and not just occupy space, but actually show up and thrive and go above and beyond. So we can't motivate a person directly, but what you can do is actually create that work environment that they find highly motivating. And that's 100% what I help employers do. I help them actually build that highly motivating work environment.
You saying that, I'm going to take my questions a little out of order since, because this segues right into a question that I have wanted to talk to about. I have actually talked to other people with your level of expertise, but every chance I get with someone with your degree and level of expertise, I try to talk about this. And that is, while of course I acknowledge that feeling valued, like you said, what you're talking about is creating the right kind of culture, the right kind of environment to make employees more motivated, make them want to stay, make them feel valued, all that stuff. Now, what I don't want to get wrong about this question is I think that is highly, highly important. That is something I
tried to pride myself on doing throughout my career. What I have noticed, though, towards the end of my official executive time where I used to work, and what I'm noticing more, is my question is, are we entering an age where it's becoming even, those things are still, of course, important to do. Is it becoming even more important, though, to start also focusing on how you design the job itself? And again, I acknowledge that these aren't separate things. They're done together. Yes. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. But what I guess what I'm getting at is, so often people take what you do and they sort of misappropriate to something like, you know, having pizza Friday. And I guess where I'm getting at with that job design is taking it one step further than just designing the job, but it's got to be a whole design made towards the particular individuals filling that positions. And I still think some employers just don't get that, especially some of them that still are kicking it back against jobs that are appropriate from a remote or work, but they're just, their go-to answer is no, you know, because that's the way you've done it. So that's a long way of asking something pretty straightforward is, where does that really tie in with that job design in creating that great workplace?
You know what? I think it's, you hit the nail right on the head. They're completely interdependent. So when we talk about improving that employee experience, part of that employee experience is the job. Well, 100% of it is job design, right? And it's understanding the notion that you should actually be building that position and customizing it based on the individual who's in it, right? And what if, huge kind of, different way of thinking here. What if you actually ask the individual in the position how to help kind of redefine that position to better match and align with their strengths and to leverage their strengths, all the while getting the work done by all means. When I talk about my methodology, it really marries this whole motivational driver concept with every step of that talent development process. So when you think about your talent development from the moment you're pitching them, then you're bringing them into your organization, what does that look like? How is that being done? Are you, are you sitting them in front of a computer for 3-4 days reading ISO documents? Are you actually, connecting them with someone so that they start to taste the culture and get a notion of how things roll in that organization? And then with another person, a mentor of sorts, someone who's in their position or has been in their position that they were hired for a number of years. So to be able to convey and connect with that whole technical aspect of the position, really to abbreviate that integration phase, but also to create those connections from the get-go, because one of the most intimidating, things about starting a new job is to really assimilate this entirely new work environment, this entirely, intact team, and you're the outsider coming in. So how can you actually make that a more welcoming experience, all the while always keeping operational requirements in the back of your mind? So making sure that you're putting in these kind of tweaks and you're putting in these modifications to the talent management, the talent development process. However, it's a means to an end to make sure that this person, you're actually saving some rework from them making mistakes, by providing the correct training, by providing those more curated developmental opportunities. These are all a means to an end to increase your bottom line. But sadly, too many organizations see what I do and what we do as kind of a nice to have rather than a, reason because we're not investing in this, we're hemorrhaging money and staff.
Totally agree. And that's where I was getting at about the pizza party Fridays. But not only that, they see it as a piecemeal deal. And you touched on this, and I'm glad you did, because it was one of the other questions that I had, or really more of an observation, and was going to let you expound on it. But immersing myself into your website like I did, what I really got a great sense of, and again, why I was so attracted to you as a guest, was that your system is an integrated system. You just used the word yourself. It's not this little hodgepodge of little things we do here. We implement this, that, and let's see if this sticks and let's see if that works. And if we want to make people happy, let's do this. You just said it in your explanation. I'll give you a chance if you want to say a little more about it, but I think you hit it pretty well. It is a cradle to grave, if you would, that cradle to grave integrated system that everything is playing off each other and complementing each other in the right amount of proportions. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And what happens is if you're only focusing on your onboarding and orientation, for example, well, you're still losing people at other phases throughout the process. So it's really important to, a perfect other example, which I see too often, if you're pitching yourself at the interview and you're making your company sound so amazing, but then to use a dating app term, you're catfishing that employee. They show up and they don't, you're not delivering on that promise. You're again already starting this employee off completely disengaged. And so they're already shopping at that very early phase of their experience with you, their journey with you. You really need to make it a comprehensive approach where every stage, every milestone in that or touch point throughout that employee journey, once they're fully trained, how are you continuing to develop them and to help them grow within the organization? Is your performance management a kind of a one and done exercise once a year, or is it an ongoing conversation that actually enables, it's a tool you provide to your employees so they can map out their eventual growth, but also where is there room to grow within their current position today? And during that process is exactly where you can start to have those conversations to say, okay, here's your job description. What parts of that job description resonate with you? What parts do you feel actually you don't ever do on a daily basis? And what do you think we need to add to leverage some of the strength that you know you have or that I may have observed, right? So these are all tools that when done well and when well-structured and well-built can be extremely powerful in terms of being able to not only continuously measure the level of engagement, so let's just be honest, the level of thrive and performance of your people, but also it's a means of being able to troubleshoot it as you go along, right? Talk about your pizza lunch. I have to add this. I have a client who reached out to me recently and they said, you know, Lori, we're looking at doing every December we do our recognition pizza lunch. And it's really been declining in the past few years. And this is a client in the healthcare sector. So we're thinking it might be the pandemic. So we want to mix it up this year and we want to do it like a half day thing. And hopefully maybe bring in some speakers, some really powerful speakers, and we're thinking that might increase the attendance. And I was like, wow, interesting. Okay. So just before we get to my suggestions for speakers, I just want to know, what is it you guys are doing throughout the year to continuously measure kind of and to acknowledge the contributions of your people? Oh, well, we've only got budgets for that one time a year in December. So that's interesting. I said, so how do you think that might actually be, you know, landing with your employees? The fact that all year round, they're not really recognized. They don't feel heard, valued, or seen. But then at the end of the year, in their minds, so their employer can sleep better, there's this recognition lunch.
And possibly paying for speakers to come and do that recognition lunch, right? Whereas me, you know, as an employee, your mindset would, there are so many other ways this would be much more rewarding to me, right? You're right. And that's so typical of what I myself have seen throughout the years. And just on that, to end on this one, but on that last bit of part where you're saying, that's where it's so important that if you approach it as a whole system, instead of just trying to plug in parts when you think of it, or because you go to a training or someone recommends you can improve in this, if you approach it as a total holistic system, then you're built, because the first thing you build off, well, of course, the first thing you build off is, why do we exist? Of course, we get that. But it builds off, you've got to know who you are, mm-hmm. why you're there and what you do. And then if you start with a good firm thing there, you build from there. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That makes absolute sense.
Now, what I want to do is rewind a little bit and go back into your former life just a little bit, into mine, to be honest with you, because I'm a former multi-decade government employee, and you had a statement that I could really relate to, and I loved the way you put it. You described your former role within the government. You said, a tenant of the workplace tethered by the golden shackles of a good pension and benefits. If I haven't made it very clear, I love that particular phrasing of that. If I had the brain to capture that entire phrase, I would steal it from you. But don't worry, I don't have the didactic memory for something like that. But I will butcher it here and there. But do you want to expound on that? Because I think you and I are going to have several come to Jesus moments on that. Some preaching to the choir, and that's okay every once in a while.
Yeah, absolutely. So when I, as I mentioned, I was with government in a variety of roles for 21 years. And when I started talking about shopping to kind of leave government, because initially I was shopping just for a regular job outside of government in the private sector. And then when I started toying with the idea of starting my own consulting venture, and it kind of became, yeah, I'm actually going to do this. When I mentioned that I was taking a year off leave, people were like, are you crazy? You've got that cushy job with government. Like you're set for life. And I was like, well, I could be, but I'm not feeling very happy there. I've been shopping for work for the past like 10 years, keeping an eye open on the want ads just because I know I'm not happy. And I feel like I work with my hands tied, but that's the nature of government, right? And they're like, but the pension, I'm like, the pension's still going to be there. I'm not going to touch it. It's going to be locked in until I want it. Well, the benefits. So I started researching even just benefits and like, oh my God, it's not as expensive as many think to get your own benefits. So I was like, I don't care. Money's not the reason. My mental health and my day-to-day, you know, just being able to have, to really make a difference and have an impact on a larger scale and specifically in the world of work and to be able to operate within spheres where I'm not, you know, put into a box this big with all the regulation and directives and all of the whatever strategic priorities of the government or the party in power at the time, to not have to operate within that, the confines of that little box was worth more than the pension, the benefits and all that, those golden shackles. So I broke free from them and I've not regretted a day or a second that decision today.
Exactly. Almost the exact same scenario in my case and zero regret here myself. Right now, again, I get my mother, God bless her heart. My mother was huge with that. The day I joined the military, the U.S. military in the army, that was one of the most relieved days for her. You know, you got a stable job, you got this. And I don't regret any of that. And it is true. I'm never unaware that in a U.S. system, that there are people who can struggle for a lot of the things that you do get through a government position when I was in the Army and also when I worked as a civilian. However, for some of us, it comes to a point where you feel like you're operating with inside that box and the constraints become so much more than what can be perceived as the risk of giving up those golden shackles, if you would. And exactly. That's exactly where I got. And I left on great terms. I was the same as you. We did what we called a deferred retirement. I did a deferred retirement. It's sitting there. When I hit a certain age, I can pull it. I did leave on very good terms, have no regrets, still have connections there, of course. And some of those connections helped me go forward with the business that I'm in now. When I actually read this book, by an author that talked about certain personality types. You know, there's thousands out there of different types of personality. This one has to do it in like four different types of temperaments. And I'm not going to plug someone else while we're on this. But what I want to get at, what he was talking about is like, you got four basic kind of temperaments. And when I went in and did the thing, I was what you call a fire temperament. So, you know, certain kind of creative personality, someone that doesn't really like to be constrained by the rules, that likes to operate independently.
Sound
that,
like one of my people.
Yeah. Playing on the run, you know, let's get a good general idea of what direction we're going. And then we can figure everything else as we go,
as
right?
We'll
figure it out because we're going to change directions anyway, you know? So we're just making ourselves feel better. Like we're more prepared, right? What really clicked it for me literally a few years ago when I read that, but the key to that was there's also certain type of organizations with predominant temperaments. And the organization in the U.S. government I was working for has a earth temperament. And bottom line, what that means is very rule oriented, very structured, very proper, hierarchical, pre-planned, stay within the lines. And it said, and I was like, oh my God, I've spent the last 30 years working in an organization that is the exact opposite
of
my temperament.
your needs and your preferences are. Absolutely.
So no wonder a little past middle age, I'm about to have a breakdown. So there you go.
It's so funny that you say that. And the four, you'll notice almost every personality assessment tool, be it everything DISC, Wiley, Myers-Briggs, it's always four. There's four big buckets they fall into. Yeah. And it sounds like you're my twin. So both of us would have not, like, seriously, why were we working within government that by its very nature, because it needs to serve, the public interests, that they need to have all these rules, regulations, and very, hierarchical approaches to the day-to-day activities.
Yeah, the one entity where the process is more important than the outcome half the time, right?
Yeah,
and if you're people like us, that just becomes very stifling. Again, I learned a lot from it, had a lot of opportunities, but
but no regrets either, because it accumulated and afforded me the experience and the actual hands-on to now kind of inform and teach others how not to do employee experience ultimately. Right.
Well,
ironically, I'm working with some government entities now, which is really interesting.
I do too, actually.
I get to actually help them improve on that experience. So that for me is extremely impactful.
And I bet it's very valuable with your clients, because you really get, because if you have not worked extensively in government administration, and let me clarify, in government administration, you can be a provider, or like say a physician or a engineer. If you're not working in a management or administration, it's hard for you to understand what they're going through, what they're talking about, and how it can be so different from the dynamics on the outside. Does that make sense? So I'm 100%
sure on the same page.
Yeah. So thank you for indulging me in that little trip down memory lane for a little bit. We're going to fast forward it back up to something, what you do now. Again, on your website, one of the ones that intrigued me most as far as the tools that you offer was the leadership blueprint. And I think this really ties in with that whole integrated thing we were talking about. But I want to give you a chance to expound on that a little bit, Lori.
Sure. So I do. I have built, again, this. I'm more about systems and making them kind of a very holistic approach to everything. So when it comes to developing your leaders, be it new, aspiring, or even more seasoned leaders, I think it's really important that I built the program so that you didn't have to source some service, some training provider for the courageous conversations, another service provider for the, conflict management, another training provider. I really built it. I thought, what are the skills that a leader needs or a manager needs to be able to really coach and empower their people, but on the day-to-day activities and with all the likely challenges that they'll encounter, what kind of skills do I need to provide them with through my training? So the first module of that 12 module. My approach is train, coach, connect. So we go through the 12 modules where, they get 2-hour webinar interactive sessions. They get to really bounce ideas off their colleagues, their leadership colleagues. If I'm doing it within one company, if it's a multi-company, then it's bounce ideas off other colleagues as well. They have challenges. They apply within the workplace on a weekly basis. So they get to start to right away practice what they're learning. And then their workbook, there's little reflection and little exercises within the workbook itself. Again, just to continue to crystallize some of the teachings that were done through the sessions. That's the train piece. The coach piece is where a lot of organizations fall short. They'll provide these one-off trainings, or maybe they find something similar to my program where it's like, several modules, but then there's no practice time. There's no accountability partner. There's nobody to help them kind of really hone some of the skills that they've recently acquired. So the coach piece is we connect them with each of the leaders and the participants with a actual coach, a professional coach, to not only identify and define some growth goals based on what they've learned to date in the training, but also map out a plan to actually bring them to fruition. So that's the coach piece. And the connect piece is the back end of my website. Once they've completed the 12 modules, I bring them onto my back end of the website and they get to connect with other leaders. And we host monthly masterminds, because one thing I've heard loud and clear is that it's extremely lonely at the top. And it's extremely lonely being a leader or a manager, because you're the conduit between whoever you answer to, whether it be a board of directors or perhaps it's a C-suite team, and your direct reports. So your direct reports, they come to you with issues and then you've got to voice them elsewhere. Well, you're not going to tell your managers that, sorry, your senior leaders that you're feeling incompetent or that you're struggling with something, because, you know, that might actually, they'll question your ability to manage. You're not going to go to your colleagues because, you know, then they're going to question the credibility of you actually sitting in this position in the first place. So it gets extremely, you know, lowly. Also, you're not going to go to your colleagues because they're likely going to troubleshoot through the lens of that industry. So that's where my Connect piece really helps, because it helps you. There's leaders in that group that are from, you know, the financial district, that they're from the healthcare, they're from different industrial type organizations. So sometimes to see the trees from a different angle and help you really, really figure it out. So that's the entire program, the leadership development program, that Train Coach Connect. But the first module is your leadership blueprint. And what that's about, it's, you can take two kinds of road trips, right? As an organization, you develop a vision, a mission, values. You can take two kinds of road trip. That's how I explain the vision, the mission, the values. One where you kind of wing it, the way we were talking about our style, right? You just wing it. Yeah. You know, you kind of have to end up somewhere. And the other, so that's the other, is where you decide, I need to end up there, but I want to hit this, that, this, and the other thing along the way. So I'm going to map out, you know, what that trip's going to look like. So that ultimate destination is the where, is your vision. And then the points you're going to hit along the way, that's your mission, right? And then the values is the conduct in the vehicle. Like, what are we going to uphold, and how are we going to take this trip? What are our rules of conduct, right? Those are the values that we're going to uphold. Well, leaders need to do the same thing. They need to start to define what kind of a leader they want to become. They need to figure out what their vision or their blueprint of their leadership style is going to be. And what when people talk about you as a leader, why are they going to say that you were a really impactful leader? What does that look like? What are some of the things that you're going to be doing? How do you want people to remember you, as a leader? And then you need to start to say, okay, so what do I have in my toolbox already? What have I got going for me that works with that vision? So in terms of a mission, but then what do I need to develop? So that's that blueprint. And it's really, what do I commit to upholding those values? So it's aligning your leadership blueprint, your leadership vision, the vision that you have for what kind of leader you want to be, the way you're going to, what do you have currently, what do you need to grow, and how you're actually going to grow them. But then making sure that you also tie that into your broader organizational vision, mission, and values. That was really long-winded.
No,
but that's essentially what that whole module is about.
I really like that you broke it down that way, and you sort of implied these two things that I want to comment on, but I think I'm going to say them maybe a little more directly. What I like about that blueprint, two biggest things, is first of all, of course, it's systematic, right? It's a systematic approach to something that is often not approached in a systematic way. You just sort of pick it up as you go, and you read this book and you take this and this advice from this person. And never mind, that person may have a totally different approach or a style than you do that would fit naturally within you, which, I'm not saying that's bad. It's just, you're sort of just grabbing going wherever you can get it. Right. So First of all, with the blueprint, I like that it has a systematic approach. What I also like is the implication that if it's a blueprint, that means it is individualized for you as a particular person, that you're building that to get the training, the mentorship, the experiences, what have you, that are going to best work with your ultimate style and your ultimate goals. Because what I see so often now is, you know, one year everybody should be a servant leader, right? Next year you should be a transformational leader. Now I'm starting to read articles, well, transformational leaders, they're sort of like charismatic leaders and they can have evil consequences. The thing is, if it is any style can be effective, generally speaking, if it matches well with the individual's basic personality traits and their tendencies and what works best with them, right? And you only get that if you have a very individualized, using your terminology, blueprint that lets you put together your leadership house the way your leadership house should look like. Not like Stuart Chappell's, not like Lori Ann's, but the one that works best for you. Now, you'll pull some stuff from Lori Ann's blueprint, like all houses do, right? Because there are some best practices, but you're still going to end up with a different design than what Lori Ann has. Absolutely. That was a long-winded way of saying what you said, but I did want to bring that home to our audience because I think that's such a key thing to leadership development, being done systematic and being done customized on an individual basis. Yes.
Absolutely. Customized to your yes. to leverage your strengths, but also to help you build on those less strong areas.
Yes. Lori, we've moved in pretty quick. I actually just have one. It's not really even a question. It's more of a suggestion from you, and you're welcome. Once I ask it, if you want to expound on your answer, that I'm more than happy to do so. But we try to ask all of our guests if you could. I'm only going to allow you to recommend one book. I know if you're probably like me, but you got about 20 you want to spill out. But one book, and that doesn't mean we automatically think that's the most important book in your life. It could be the first book that comes to your head. For one book, we're going to do on the review and riff. We do a review and riff on the podcast series. So one book maybe you want to throw at us.
I love the and again, maybe that sounds biased because I know that he works alongside Wiley, but for me, the 5 Dysfunctions of a Team.
Yes.
I'm such a huge fan of Patrick Lencioni and just that book itself. And I like the way it's written, like a fable.
Yes.
But it's a fable that when you do read it, you identify with it and it really resonates with, you know, you're able to identify every character at that table of that retreat. You've encountered them in your life and to help people really shift their focus from, you know, we need to focus on results as a team. And to shift it to understand that results are kind of a byproduct and you really need to focus more on the behaviors of that team and how are they interacting and how are they collaborating. That's a really powerful one for me.
I do. I thank you. That's actually going to be in the queue for us to do review and riff. And that's one I experienced myself on a cross-country drive several years ago. I actually did that as an audio book and turned around and actually got the book and read it again a couple years later. But no, I agree. I think that's the real power of the book. You hit it, is the relatability to it. If you've been in any kind of team, you definitely recognize these sort of stereotypical versions of people.
Oh, right? They are.
Right? Yes.
They're
yes.
Everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my
exactly.
God. Absolutely. Yeah. No.
Well, Lori Ann, I'm going to turn it over to you to add anything else you would like to turn in before we call this baby quits. However, before I do, I just want to let my audience know that beginning with the link to this book, The 5 Dysfunctions of a Team, and along with Lori Ann's website, any other kind of information and social media links, that will be in the description section of this episode. But I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to you, Lori, and anything you would like to leave us with before we close out.
No, other than, you know, you're more than welcome to connect on LinkedIn. And when in the links on this episode, we'll also include the link to the website where they can actually sign up to download. I have a nice infographic, a one pager of all those motivational drivers and how they might show up. And what are some of the processes in your talent development strategy that you need to be thinking about? So it's a one pager as to the why, you know, and I tried to draft it. When I did it, for example, clarity. People want to work for organizations that they understand what the expectations of the organization and their roles are, but also what they can expect from the organization. So I've tried to add that with every driver. So they're more than welcome to sign up and download that. But I think at the end of the day, it's a great starting point in terms of the recipe, the ingredients of the recipe to success when it comes to culture.
Thank you, Lori Ann. I really enjoyed the conversation. I'm going to edit out what I said earlier to Lori Ann, so I'll say it in a little smoother way. Audience, I was a little bit of a hot mess today, a little bit more than I normally am, and Lori Ann has been super gracious with me, and I want to thank you for that and all the great information that you've passed on to us.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
There you
I
go.
I flooded that as well.
Yeah. I'm rubbing off on you.
You are. And then leave it in there.
Oh, Lori Ann, thank you. You have a good day. And everyone else, we'll see you next time.